All right, everybody. I know you've been waiting a long time for this. You probably gave up and went somewhere else, but I'm back. And I actually didn't read the full chapter 7 last time. So I'm going to start where I left off. And you can see on the screen that we had a picture to look at. And so here we go. "I shall make a sorry page, my lady," said Robin ruefully, "but I can sing and I can read a little to while away the time for your lordship," he offered, "and I can pin letters for you." Sir Peter kept Robin's hand in his and spoke directly to him. "Each of us has his place in the world," he said. "If we cannot serve in one way, there is always another. If we do what we are able, a door always opens to something else." There it was again, Robin thought, a door. He wondered whether Sir Peter meant the same thing that Brother Luke had intended. Each of the travelers were assigned to his own place. Robin was to have a chamber in the keep. The friar was to be lodged in a little room over the chapel in the inner ward of the castle, and John Go in the Wind was given quarters over the outer entrance gate. Before leaving the hall, he asked a favor. "By your leave," he said, "I would like to visit my old mother, who lives not far away, but I shall stay here a while until my young master finds his way about." Now that he was well received, Robin found everything about Lindsay exciting and interesting. The view from the top of the keep where they went in the morning was breathtaking. "I can see for miles in every direction," he said excitedly. "Surely no enemy could attack without being seen by the watch." "Didst forget the fog?" asked John Go in the Wind, who had accompanied him. Gotta find my mouse here. "And look yonder," said Adam, the bowman who stood watch that day. "See that tiny moving spot in the field?" At first, Robin could not find anything that moved in the open field to which Adam pointed. Then he was just able to make out the figure of a shepherd and a flock of sheep. After a great deal of Adam's directing and pointing, he could see a woodcutter emerging from the trees by the river. "By night or under cover of mist," said Adam, "a whole army could creep over hill and through forest without being seen. 'Tis from the north and west that we look for trouble. Lord Jocelyn to the west hath long coveted this domain, and Sir Hugh Fitzhugh to the north yonder, who is cousin to Sir Peter, hath a quarrel with him." "But they could not take so strong a castle, surely," said Robin. "We can be starved out," said Adam. From the other side of the tower, Robin could look down upon the town and the church roof and see clearly how the church was shaped like a cross. He could see the roof of the market cross in the open square and the people walking about. He could see the bend of the river and the two bridges, one leading west and the one to the south where they had crossed yesterday. To the north, the ground fell straight away down to the river, more than 100 feet below. "My mother's cottage is there," said John, pointing north, "over the hill and into the next valley." Robin could see where the tower of the village church showed above the trees. Beyond, he could see the manor house against a dark forest which crowned the hills far, far away. "Is it near to the village, where yon church tower stands?" asked Robin. "Aye, 'tis just there this side of the church, a tidy bit of a house on the heath where she lives alone with her cat. There is a path all the way. If thou'rt to call upon her, she would bake thee a bannock." Robin repeated the directions, but laughed at the thought of going all that way to make a visit. "Go you by that road I see leading up from the river here?" he asked again. "No," said John, "for 'tis a long way round by Lethem Bridge. I go through the town and by the drover's road and across the ford beyond." It was more difficult for Robin to go down the circular stair from the top of the keep than it had been to go up. Each step was set on a center newel, and the steps fanned out from it. Robin had to keep to the outside wall to allow room for the crutches to spread far enough to bear his weight. John went ahead of him to catch him in case he should fall. "I should get the way of it soon," said Robin. Before the day was out, he found it easier. They had gone up and down stair after stair, up to the watchtowers and the belfry of the chapel, to the kitchens and storerooms, to the armory, and down to the dungeons. Then John took Robin to the stables to see the horses. There were dappled Percherons from France and Shire geldings of tremendous size built to bear the weight of men in armor. There were lighter animals for hunting, hawking, and riding, and others still smaller, like the jennet Robin had ridden. Robin thought the gray one looked like his father's favorite. How he wished he might ride it, going astride properly as he should. Would he ever again be able to mount a horse? Would he be able to practice in the tilting yard or go a-hawking? Would he ever stand straight and tall? Last of all, they went to the workshop near the stables. There the ewe-bows were made and repaired. Staves for lances and pike staffs were cut. Such small things as plates, cups, bowls, and platters were made by the turners in the town. Arrows were made by the Fletchers. "It is here we shall make the little harp," said John. "Can we make it soon?" asked Robin. "We shall begin tomorrow if I can find the wood," promised John. As soon as Robin was settled in the household of the castle, he was taken in hand again by Brother Luke, who laid out a plan of study and recreation for him that would fit in with the duties assigned him as page. Sir Peter had explained that he would expect Robin to attend to everything which it was possible for him to do. Part of each day was spent with Adam, the yeoman, shooting at a mark. Part of the day in studying Latin. Evenings after supper, the household servants, pages, craftsmen, and all those not on watch gathered about the fire in the great hall where Piers, Nightingale, or John told tales or sang ballads. Each day, the friar took Robin down the long path to the river to swim. The water was cold as ice and swift-flowing, but now Robin had learned to grit his teeth and plunge in. It should have been one of his duties to serve at the high table where Sir Peter and the Lady Constance sat with other members of the family and visiting nobles. But because it was so difficult for him to carry things, he was excused from that and was required only to see that his lady was well looked after and the little boys were helped with the cutting of their meat and breaking of the bread for sopping. One of the hounds that searched for bones among the straw litter learned to come to Robin for tidbits, seeming to know that he had found a special friend. Robin was careful to find bones from the joint, with juicy bits of meat still clinging to them, and soon he was Robin's friend. He even slept by Robin's bed instead of near the fire in the hall with the other dogs, and followed him everywhere. His name was Dioth, or Doth, because he had been brought from a town in Flanders of that name. Does that sound fun? How many of you guys have a dog of your own? One day, late in October, as the friar walked with Robin along the side of the hill leading down to the river, Doth following, Robin stopped in the path. "Think you it is really helping my legs to swim?" he asked anxiously. "I cannot straighten my back and can walk only as before, halfway bent over. What think you, Brother Luke? Shall I ever straighten?" "I know not what to think about that," Brother Luke sighed. Then he lifted his head and said firmly, "God alone knows whether thou'lt straighten or no. I know not. But this I tell thee. A fine and beautiful life lies before thee, because thou hast a lively mind and good wit. Thine arms are very strong and sturdy. Swimming hath helped to make them so, but only because thou hast had the will to do it. "Fret not, my son, none of us is perfect. It is better to have crooked legs than a crooked spirit." We can only do the best we can with what we have. That, after all, is the measure of success. What we do with what we have. Come, let us go on. Robin nodded slowly, then said hopefully, "Peter the Bowman says I have a good arm for the bow and a keen eye for the mark. I can put an arrow up quite well for a beginner," he says. "And how goeth the woodworking?" asked the friar. "John Go-in-the-Wind is helping me to shape the base of the little Saxon harp. It is to be almost like his, but is to have my own mark. Where the front block holds the thin maple in a curve, his is plain. Mine shall have tracery." He bent the maple around an oval-shaped form whilst it was green. "And meantime, John is showing me how to shape and smooth the post, which is the upright. It, too, is of maple, but it is well-seasoned and beautifully marked. From a deer that Adam the bowman killed, we are drying gut for the strings." "Thou art becoming a true craftsman," said the friar, "and wilt be able to play the harp when 'tis done?" "Already I can pick out part of the tune of Caw the Yaws, and can sing it as well. It is sad, but pleasant to hear. When I learn it all, I shall sing it for my Lady Constance. And when I see my mother again, I shall sing it for her." Robin stopped for a moment, then went on thoughtfully, "Think you my mother will know me when she sees me thus?" "Thy mother will know and love thee always, my son," the friar assured him, "whether thou art bent or straight, well or ill, knight or clerk, lord or minstrel." When would he see his mother? Where was she now? October had passed in lingering summer warmth, but with the coming of November, there was often fog and rain. When it cleared, raw winds swept down from the north, whistling through corridors and halls, sending up whirls of dust in the courtyard, billowing the tapestries that hung on the walls. Brother Luke took Robin each day, as before, to swim. They followed the path to a place near Lethem Bridge. "It will be good for thee even in the chilly autumn weather," he comforted, when Robin shivered at the thought of the icy water. "It sends the blood flying through thy veins to warm thee. Besides, it strengthens thy body, and best of all, it strengthens thy spirit to do a hard thing." Robin was now quite strong, although he could not straighten. He was able to go about easily from keep to tower, from hall to chapel, from turret to dungeon. Even the twisting stairs held no terror for him, because he had learned to place the crutches carefully and swiftly where they would hold and balance him. He could play games with the boys in the courtyard, shooting at a mark, hide and go seek, and duck on a rock. Robin's keen eye and strong arms helped him to send the duck, a small pointed stone, so far he could easily get to the goal and back before the other boys could retrieve the duck. "Ah, no fair," cried Dennis one day. "You can go twice as fast as we can on those 7-league boots of yours." Robin only laughed and played the harder. Many times a day he went in and out the castle gate, and he had already made friends with Alan at gate. Alan was a gruff old fellow, for he was long hours in attendance on duty and was responsible for the safety of all within the castle. He challenged everyone who passed, whether going in or coming out, demanding to know his business. Robin soon learned that Alan at gate had a soft side as well as a rough one. Once, when he had come on Alan unawares, he heard him playing the flageolet. Robin told him about the Saxon harp he was making. Robin discovered, too, that Alan liked sweets, so he kept a good supply of honey cakes in his pocket for largesse. He was allowed to come and go through the gate whenever he liked, with Dath at his heels. Now that the castle is well known to thee, and thou art well started on making the harp, it is time for me to visit my old mother, said John Go in the Wind to Robin. Dost know how to go on with the harp?
Yes, I am sure I do, Robin answered. It is a secret I wish to keep, and if I need help, Brother Luke can give it to me.
William Wise, the farrier, is making the tool of hardened iron, as you asked him to do. I shall be careful to make the holes and the pegs of the strings to fit, or for the strings to fit. Let me see once more how they go and how many there are.
John showed Robin the graceful instrument and how the 7 strings were fastened with tiny pegs in the maple sounding board, which covered the hollow oval base. He showed him how they were drawn tightly to the upper arm of the harp by wooden keys, which just fitted the tapered holes tightly enough so they stayed whichever way they were turned.
"'Twill not be easy to get the keys exactly like the holes," he cautioned.
"No," said Robin, "but I can do it. I know I can."
"Thou canst but try," said John. "Anyone can not do it."
Robin went with John across the courtyard to the outer gate.
"Dost know where to find me in case of need?" asked John.
"Yes," said Robin, mimicking the way John had told it to him.
"'Tis over the path, beyond the river, across yon field, and through the forest, then fording the stream and up another field, through another wood, and 'tis just there this side of the church in the village of Tripheath. A tidy bit of a house on the heath, where she lives with her cat. And if thou art there, she'd bake thee a bannock."
John laughed.
"That's the right of it," he agreed. "And now, farewell, young master."
John slung his pack and the harp across his back and was gone.
Early that same day, mists began to rise, which later became a thick fog. Little could be seen from watchtower or wall, but a blank whiteness covering everything. Even the outer walls of the castle were hidden from the watchmen at the top of the keep. When Robin crossed the outer bailey, going from the workshop along the wall to the inner castle gate, he could see only a few steps ahead. Sometimes he could scarcely see Dath, who was close at his heels. Sometimes heads appeared out of nowhere, or legs walked along as if they were unattached. When Robin reached the drawbridge and started to cross, Allan at Gate's voice shouted the challenge. Even though the voice was familiar, it sounded ghost-like and strange to Robin as it came out of the fog.
"Who goes there?" said the voice.
"'Tis I, Robin," came the answer, as Robin crossed the moat and passed under the portcullis. "This be a treacherous cloud of mist," said Allan at Gate, as Robin entered.
"Will there be danger in it, think you?" asked Robin.
"Aye, danger enough," said Allan gravely. "The Welsh yonder long have wanted this castle, for it be strong. Now with the fog to help, and so few to guard the walls, there's chance they might get it, God forbid.
If my father would only come with his men, it would be safe," declared Robin. "He is the strongest knight in the king's bodyguard, and Alfred the Dane is his finest bowman. Alfred can shoot out the eyes of an owl at 200 paces." While he boasted, Robin's eyes shone. "But," he ended sadly, "neither Alfred nor my father is here." When supper was served in the great hall that evening, there were few gathered to eat, because every man was on guard, and only the women folk and the children kept Sir Peter company. The 2 pages, Dennis and Lionel, attended them, and Robin, as usual, sat between Lady Constance and the 2 little boys. Dath and the other hounds seemed ill at ease. They paced up and down the hall, settled themselves in the rushes on the floor, only to rise and begin walking about again.
"Down, Dath," commanded Robin.
Quiet, Roy. Be still, Nance, Dennis ordered. They dropped to the floor for a moment, but were soon moving about again. Not even the bones kept them quiet for more than a short time. Lady Constance talked pleasantly with her ladies, but Sir Peter seemed to be always listening. While they were still at table, there was a sudden commotion. Shouts and cries from the inner ward came up through the windows, and a sound of running feet pounding along the passage. Sir Peter started from his chair. Adam, the yeoman, came bursting into the hall, so hurried with ill news that he scarcely stopped to bob his head before speaking. "Your lordship," he began out of breath, "we are attacked. The Welsh are hammering at the town gate. They have slain the watch by creeping close to the wall in the fog. They waited for him to turn, then put an arrow in his back." "'Tis come, then," said Sir Peter, reaching for the great sword which hung on the wall. "What strength are they? Is it known?" "It is hard to say," said Adam. "They make a great noise about the walls, but naught can be seen for the fog. They have built fires under the south gate, and flambeaux glow on all sides, so I fear we are surrounded." "Gather every man not armed into the inner bailey, where they will be provided with longbows and arrows," directed Sir Peter. To Lady Constance he said, "You, my dear wife, gather all the women and children into the keep. Have them bring clothing and pallets. There, at least, we have water in the well, and 'tis a strong fortress." "Yes, my husband," Lady Constance said obediently, rising and gathering the children to her, while her ladies hastily collected embroidery frames, cloaks, and fripperies. The two pages, Dennis and Lionel, carried the food from the table, then took the table boards from the trestles, and transferred everything to the hall of the keep. The keep was close to the gatehouse between the inner and outer ward, so there was great excitement in the courtyard. "What can I do?" asked Robin. "Will you care for the little boys?" asked Lady Constance. "Little Allison shall come with us." "Yes," promised Robin, "each can hold to my jerkin, so we shall keep together among the yeomen." When the boys had been safely delivered to the keep, Robin remembered the little harp which lay unfinished in the workshop under the south wall. He must get it and keep it safe too. Before morning, the walls of the town had been breached, and before the day was out, the town was taken. When the portcullis of the outer bailey of the castle was raised to admit the yeomen, the townspeople swarmed in. Allen at gate directed the dropping of the heavy iron gate, and it came down so quickly that the last man to enter narrowly missed having his head chopped off. And that is the end of Chapter 8, and we will see you next.